new passion?
Well, before I answer that question, I'm going to give you a bit more detail on the fact that I did meet Simon and Kathy 34 years ago. They did our marriage prep. I have shrunk every year since. My wife has won medals every year since. And yes, Simon and Kathy, we do remember what you said. It's been condemning. Let me just tell you about where I was at, not for over 40 years in the city, but I want to take you back 9 years to when I was 51 years old. Here is the picture of Richard Begonnen, a senior businessman and a Christian by then of over 40 years, over 35 years in standing at that time. And it's a picture, ladies and gentlemen, I'm afraid I'm not proud of. You see, I look back and I see myself now as a member of the Christian rotting sponge party. What do I mean? I mean I'd had fantastic teaching, drip, 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 drip on top of me in churches like this from people like Simon for year after year after year. Fantastic. But I never gave the sponge a squeeze. I never actually applied it going out to people. So therefore, just like the sponge in the bucket, the drip, drip, drip on the top led to a rotting away underneath. Expressed differently, I wasn't growing as a Christian. There's cordon bleu food out there. I was still on the baby stuff. I look back and I see myself as being the king of the warm conversation. If I managed to mention Jesus in my conversation to somebody in that day, I was actually doing this. Well done, Richard. You've managed to mention Jesus today. As I went to bed with a warm feeling that I'd done just that. But where did the conversations go? You know, normally they were in an intellectually interesting moment that may have picked up from where I'd been before with that person or may not. Very rarely I'd managed to ask someone to come to a Christian event. It may be a guest speaker. Very, very rarely I might have been able to give someone a book. But in general, well done, Richard. You managed to mention Jesus today. I've been in churches all of my life which have had strap lines. You know, something like, we reach, we build, we send. And I got it. We reach people for Christ. We build people up in Christ. Now, where's my checkbook? Who are we sending today? I had absolutely no comprehension that I had a ministry. That I'd been placed in a situation where I had a unique circle of friends around me to whom I should be taking the gospel. And the real problem, even as a Christian of over 35 years in great Bible teaching churches, the truth was I didn't know how to take the gospel to my friends. Now, it's that changed 9 years ago, and we're going to see a very short film that sets out exactly how we've come up with something so that every single one of us can take the gospel to our friends without any training. I repeat, without any training. So that you are empowered to be able to take the gospel to the circle that God has placed you in. You have a ministry. Please watch this.
For the last 5 or 6 years, I've been delighted to watch from afar as this resource, the Word One-to-One, has been written, developed, used, tweaked, and is now ready for use by the churches. I'm delighted with it. It's a wonderful resource to have, and I'm thrilled it's available. Well, why am I so delighted with this resource? It's because, and I think this is genius, it gives people the information as you meet with them one-to-one, but they don't have to say a word. Now, they can speak, but they can just go through it with the person they're meeting with, and they're saying, I'm not going to display my ignorance. I'll give you a hearing, but don't make me talk too much. I'll just be listening. I'll get on top of the information. That's what's great. But you may be saying, look, I think one-to-one's a great idea, but I don't have the answers, I don't have the doctrine, I don't have the training to do this. And the great thing about this resource is you don't need those things. You just need the boldness to say to a friend, have you looked at the original document for yourself? Would you look at the Bible with me? And then as you go through, the questions are there, the answers are there. And that's what's so terrific about it. It just equips you to do it. You know, we can't all be Bible teachers, but we can all be Bible sharers. And the key to sharing the Bible is having confidence that it is where the power is. So as I get the Bible open with my friend, God will do his work. He'll do a miracle. He'll bring them to new life. And this resource helps me to do that, takes me through the Bible so that I can share it, and God can then unleash his word in people's lives. Please use it. It changes lives.
We can't all be Bible teachers, but we can all be Bible sharers. Well, here is the book that has sold more copies than any other in the history of printing. It's the Bible. It sits on more bookshelves in more homes around the world than any other book. And you know what? Like this, it's absolutely useless. You see, the truth is you can pull it off most bookshelves around the world, and here's what you'll do. Now, this, when I've opened it, this is a whole different ballgame, because we're told that this comes inspired by God. It is the living word of God. And we're told that it never goes out empty. But the truth is that the world out there today does not know what this book says. We live in a biblically ignorant age. We do not have the Bible at home open. We do not have the Bible in our schools. And frankly, even if it is in churches, it's not, unlike this church, it's not always taught properly. We don't know what it says. Now, if you're not a Christian here today, I am delighted you're with us. Absolutely delighted. Because this is a profoundly important hour that you are in this service. What we're about to discuss, and I'm not speaking for an hour, I had you all worried there, but what I'm about to say today is of profound importance to you. This is something that has a peace that passes all understanding. If you're a Christian here today, listen up. I am not the same man that I was 9 years ago. I'm no longer on baby food. And we talk about actually reading a Bible and finding out what it says. Well, my minister said this to me. He gave me Mark 4, verse 24, 9 years ago. Here's what the verse says. Pay attention to what you hear. With the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Well, there was the problem. To the measure you use, it will be measured to you. I wasn't using it. And the worst gets worse. And still more will be added to you. So as the sponge gets a squeeze, so you take in more, so you see the Lord at work, so you receive even more. I'll read it again. Pay attention to what you hear. With the measure you use, it will be measured to you. And still more will be added to you. Now, if you are someone who actually has an ability to open this book and show your friends what the Bible has to say, here's the problem in a biblically ignorant age. So you sit down and you say, now look, what it says in the book of Isaiah, but the truth today is that people don't know whether Isaiah is a bird or a plane. They don't know whether there's an Old Testament or a New Testament. And the very big danger is that you will actually, having turned up with this lovely book, lovingly tucked under your arm, you will walk away from a Bible study thinking you've really showed someone what this has to say. And the danger could well be that that person says it's great for you that you know that book backwards. But actually for me, you've just shown me I really don't know it, and it is even more inaccessible to me today than it was. Hence why we came up with the Word One-to-One. Here is the first booklet. All we have done is we have deconstructed what would normally happen in a Bible study. So at the very end of the book, it has the passage that you would normally have had as a reading in church. It's at the end. Why? Because we discovered that most of our friends who didn't understand the Bible were glazing over by line 2 or 3 because they didn't understand it. So all we have done is unpack it verse by verse, as I'm about to show you on the screen, by actually walking you through the passage that we had today. So we have a few verses at a time, and then we have on the other side some really good notes. Now, the great news is that the notes are not from a demented insurance executive. The notes come from William Taylor, one of our best Bible teachers of this decade, the minister at St. Helens Bishopsgate in the heart of the city. All William and I have done is take this apart and put it into a socially acceptable form actually to show our friends. Now, before I start that, where are our friends? Where is their thinking today? Well, I've now been at this 9 years going around the world, and I want to give you two pictures. One is by a comedian known as Lee Mack, and I'm quoting from him on our radio program recently on the BBC. He was on a program called Desert Island Discs, and you have to choose 7 discs because you want this music to come with you to a desert island. And at the end of it, you are told you can have the complete works of Shakespeare and you can have a Bible. And Lee Mack said this at the end of the program. He said, "I'm so pleased you've mentioned about the Bible." He said, "I was thinking," and this is very Lee Mack, he said, "I was thinking if an alien came down to my planet today and said, is there one book that could show me what actually answers humanity? This is the way to live as humans. What would I say?" And I'd say immediately, "Oh, yes, there's definitely a book. It's called the Bible." And the alien would say, "And what does it say?" And of course, Lee Mack said, I suddenly realized I'd have to say, "Well, I don't know because I've never read it." Well, that's where most of my friends are at. When I actually get to talk to them, where is their thinking? Actually, this is what they've said. And they've said it in countries all around the world to us from all kinds of social backgrounds, from people who are successful and people who are not successful. "I'm not at peace." That's where they're at today. They're not thinking about coming to your church. They're not thinking about going on your Christianity Explore course. They're not thinking of Christ. They simply don't know him. What they're saying is, "My life's not gone the way I expected. I've simply not got what I thought I was going to get." Now, it might be I've been terribly successful. It might be that I've got all the things that I ever dreamt of. But you know what? There must be more than this. Or it might be that life's not gone the way I'd expected. I said at one meeting, I said, "Look, some of us have tried marriage. Some of us have tried it many times." One guy nearly fell off his chair. He'd been married 4 times. He knows that relationships aren't necessarily the answer. I said at another meeting, I said, "Some of us have been very fortunate. We're building barns for our possessions. But to put the classic car collection in a bigger barn." And a guy nearly fell off his chair who was just in the middle of building a bigger barn for his bigger car collection. But he knew full well that's not the answer. I've just come from Perth. In Perth, many people today are now facing unemployment or unemployed. They know that the company is not the answer. I went to a retirement bash for the most important man in my industry over the last 30 years. I don't think I'll ever go to a retirement bash like it again. The whole evening was actually saying to this guy, lauding him, how brilliant he had been through the whole of his career. How the great thing about him was that he was always 24/7. You knew you could get hold of him. You knew he was interested in the company. Do you know what that man said when he stood up at the end of an evening that had been all about him? He stood up, he walked to the front, he looked at the table with his family on it, and he said, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." The world is not at peace. The things that we think are going to bring us that peace simply don't. So that's where your friends are at. So that's why sharing the good news of Christ is so essential. You see, I look back now and I think I was like the man who discovered the cure for cancer. I had actually got cancer, I had discovered the cure, I had been cured of cancer, and I decided to keep it to myself. See, as Christians, isn't that a damning statement for us? Because we've got the answer to life. And my Christian life is not about crawling into church, seeing the drawbridge go up behind me as the doors are shut, breathing a sigh of relief, plugging myself into the spiritual mains, getting a spiritual charge for the week, and then draining out, as I did during the week, so that I crawled back into church or that midweek event and asked for a spiritual charge all over again. It's not that. It's not that in the same way that you who've been giving as Christians know that the joy of Christian giving is not that God is so tiny and so poor that he needs your money. You know that's not the case. It is that God has given you the great luxury of being part of his work around the world, wherever it is, so that you are party to it. He doesn't need your money. He's the creator of the universe. It's that he gives you that joy. Well, the same is true of the Great Commission. That's what we should all be doing. It isn't about looking inward for the fact, I'm all right, Jack, I've been saved. It is about having something to share. So let's have a look at the booklet, and let's take a look at John chapter 1. Now, what I'm going to do is simply run through the booklet. And as I do, you are going to see, please, that actually what I say is exactly what the booklet says. Expressed in English, if I can do it with the booklet, you can do it with the booklet. Because we put everything you need into the booklets. Now, not just on this quick shot that I'm going to show you, but if there are passages from the Old Testament where Jesus is fulfilling a prophecy, guess what? They're in the booklets. So let's have a look at this unique passage, which is at the start of John. John, verses 1 to 18. It's an overview. Now, in the city, I would call this an executive summary. But it's an overview. And therefore, being an overview, it is understandable that it's going to need some unpacking. Just have a look at the left-hand side of the screen. Do you see the yellow sticky? John's gospel starts with an overview. There is a lot in this section, so don't be surprised that it's going to need some unpacking. In other words, what I've said, it's in the book. Now, when your friends agree to meet you for a coffee to actually look at the gospel, they think they know what they're going to see. They think it's going to start with a baby. They think it's going to be in Bethlehem. They think there's going to be angels, and they think there's going to be wise men and shepherds. Well, they're in for a surprise. So don't be surprised at what it says on the right-hand side of the page. You might find this a surprising start. No angels, no Bethlehem, no stable, no baby Jesus, no wise men. Did you notice that every single page in this booklet is coloured in denim blue? That's because you can be a prince or a prisoner and you are comfortable in your jeans. You see, the issue about turning up with your big fat Bible to show someone is you are comfortable with using that. They are not, because it is a completely alien world to them. When they open these little booklets, you've got one and are comfortable with it. The key thing is they have one and they are comfortable with it. So that this is user-friendly form of the gospel. So let's look at John verses 1 to 5. Because my time is short, I'm going to assume that you remember it from when we just had the reading. So my job as the person who's buying the coffee for my friend is to go through the right-hand side of the page. Look how often the phrase "the word" is used. The arrow has gone to verse 1. In the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God. And the note says, John stresses twice, the word was there in the beginning. So that raises the question, which comes next, what or who is the word? Well, verse 1 has just said the word was with God, and it's just claimed something quite extraordinary. It's claimed the word was God. Did you see how verse 2 started? He was with God in the beginning. The word is therefore a person. And then verse 3, through him all things were made, without him nothing was made that has been made. Well, then that's just added that the word who is God and a person claims to make everything. But John's claim for the word goes even further. Verse 4, in him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. Let me just tell you very quickly how we came to do this. I thought I'd lined up the ultimate in evangelism. You see, I seriously thought, as a Christian of over 35 years, evangelism is what Simon Manchester does. It was for the professional. I thought the best thing I had to do was to invite a friend to come on a Christianity Explore course, hand them over to the professional. Bring them to an evening where there'd be a professional at work. Hand them over to a professional. So I lined up Europe's most powerful insurance broker, a man whose nickname is literally Golden Tonsils. And I lined him up with my good friend, Professor John Lennox, who some of you will know has been used so much in the last decade to take on the new atheists. He's been the main man to debate with Richard Dawkins. Well, I thought, job done. You know, all I've got to do is pass the bread rolls, make sure everybody's water's topped up, sit back, watch someone be converted by Professor John Lennox. Well, I sat through two dinners of 3.5 hours each. And of course I've been praying for these dinners to happen. And what I watched was my non-Christian insurance executive friend go off like a demented AK-AT gun. He just fired shots time after time, and like an absolute mismatch finals at Wimbledon, the professor aced the ball back every single shot, and my friend didn't understand the answers, because what was coming back over the net was a biblical answer. And my friend had no context to put those answers. So I found myself saying, at the end of 7 hours of debate, "Thanks very much for hosting these dinners, my dear friend, but I can't see the point of holding another one." And my dear mate said, "I said, why? I love it when you bring Lennox from Oxford University for these debates. I absolutely love this debate." And I said, "No, the truth is, pal, I've at long last found a subject you know absolutely nothing about. You are biblically ignorant. I can't see," and this is how vague I was, "I can't see any point in having another one of these debates unless we ask John back to, quotes, open the Bible." Well, he agreed to another dinner. He came, and he started with John Lennox came back and showed him this executive summary, this overview of John 1, 1 to 18. The AK-AT gun went off on verse 1. It slowed down on verse 2. It got to verse 3. And by verse 4, I saw Europe's most golden tonsilled man, brilliant as he is, with his jaw metaphorically on the table. Why? Because for the first time in his life, he understood the claims of the gospel. He understood in him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. And no one had ever shown him before. Well, I didn't need to see that twice. I rushed back to William Taylor and said, "William, will you please help teach me to teach this book of John?" And as we did, we very quickly realized that what we needed was something that, A, I could remember, because I'm not a Bible teacher, I'm only a Bible sharer, and B, something I could show to my friends. Well, the rest, as they say, is history. We printed these books just over 2 years ago, and they went global like that. In China, the downloads of these books in traditional and simplified Chinese, which are available on our website, have been so huge the government has blocked the website. I would be remiss in not telling you some of the stories about what's happened. So a businessman called David, I offered David this over a couple of years, and he said, "No, Richard, thanks very much, but, you know, this isn't for me. I admire your faith, mate, but it's not for me." And then David told me he was in the garden weeding one Sunday, and he suddenly realized, "You know, I've lost 4 friends in the last year, most from cancer and 1 from a heart attack. The truth is, I don't know what I believe. I think I need to see those notes." Or another David who sent me a one-line email one morning only a couple of weeks ago. "Richard, I need to do the notes." Interesting. I'd offered him a couple of times as well over the last couple of years. He told me when I met him, "Richard, I was in the gym, I was on the treadmill, and I suddenly realized, you idiot. You're on the treadmill of your life, and you have no idea in what direction you're going." And then he told me, he said, "Richard, you know my marriage has broken down in the last couple of years, even though we have got more material possessions than we thought we'd ever have as a couple." He said, "You know I own the company, but having that job satisfaction, that's not done it for me. I don't know what I'm doing. Can I have a look at the notes?" A 78-year-old woman who was asked by her friend to go to see her friend's mother, who was now homebound at 91. So this lady of 78 thought, "What should I do? Shall I take a box of chocolates? Shall I take some flowers?" She walked past the church bookstall and she saw the notes, so she picked up a set of the notes. Well, the 91-year-old was solidly converted. Why? Because at 91, she said, "I knew I didn't have the answer to life. I hadn't got what it took. I wasn't clear on where I was going. Now I've got it. Thank you so much. I know a peace that passes all understanding." Let's have a look at that last verse that we had today. And that is verse 12 of John 1. So there you go. "Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, He gave the right to become children of God. Now, the reason I've chosen that verse is they never remember what I say. What a great joy. As you go to see your friends with these books, it's not about you. First of all, it's not about you in that you haven't come up with some great skill, cunning, and brilliance to ask your friend that they say yes. You will discover that actually the Lord has been at work in the lives of your friends. Some niggling little thing that you probably won't find about for ages. But that's why they've agreed to meet you. You don't know it. They have that little niggle that's come from the Lord. And when they sit down and look at this, they don't remember what you say, but they do remember what the word says, because it's a living word. And this verse is one that in the city I've particularly seen absolutely fixate people. To all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Now just think for a second. Simon Manchester gets a phone call from the palace. It's the Queen. Now, this bit you will get. Simon, you have done absolutely nothing to deserve this, but I have decided to adopt you into my family. You are now a prince of the royal household. Here are all the keys to the palaces, and here are the Coutts' private bank accounts. You are now my son. That, ladies and gentlemen, is nothing, nothing in relation to this verse. The creator of the universe, someone who on page one, if I'd have had the time, I would have highlighted, is actually talking about the real you for eternity, has said to you, you can be adopted into my family. Forever. Eternally. Now, if you've ever seen a dead body, you'll know the suit has hit the floor and Elvis is no longer in the building. You know it. They're not there. The point I'm trying to make is that actually, if we stop and think about it, we know that this is not the real you. I tell you, at the age of 60, this is not doing well. I'm shorter than I used to be, and it is not wearing well. It's not the real me. It's only a suit. The real me is my soul. And this thing that you are showing your friends is the only thing that's ever been written to actually meet them about eternity. It's the Maker's instructions. And what this is saying is that they can be adopted into being a child of God. So do you see what the notes say? Look at the unique and awesome gift for those who accept him. They are adopted into his family. Imagine being adopted into the royal family. God offers something way bigger. The phrase he gave the right, his offer comes with absolute authority. The right for what? To become children of God. And then the yellow sticky says on the left-hand side, this is a right to a family's wealth beyond your wildest dreams. This father is richer than a multi-trillionaire. Well, that's true, isn't it? The creator God. If I was adopted into Bill Gates' family, I'd only be a billionaire. If I was adopted into the family of the Creator God, my father is a trillion, 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 trillionaire.